Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And if this is your first time listening to the show, know that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, know that all of our shows, including this one, can be found at answers.network. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a wonderful favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, our question today comes from Jackie in Los Angeles, California. And she writes, I'm a 38-year-old mother of a teen and a tween. I love your show, and I'm grateful for all the great guests you have on who have provided excellent guidance for my husband and I dealing with the many challenges our family has gone through over the last few years. My question is, how can I get my mom to understand that I love her dearly, but when she is with us, she can't stop telling me what I'm doing wrong and how I need to fix it? With Mother's Day coming up, I am torn between wanting to celebrate her and bracing myself for her criticism. Now, with the answers to this question and more, our guest today, Meg Stafford, is a writer who loves exploration of all kinds. Her 2011 memoir, Topic of Cancer, won 6 literary awards for its engrossing and hilarious portrayal of surviving and thriving after a life-altering diagnosis of breast cancer. Now, for over 25 years, Meg has been observing how small, remarkable moments enrich our lives in her monthly newspaper column, A Moment's Notice. Now, as a social worker in private practice, she's been helping others negotiate the terrain of relationships and connections for over 35 years. Now, her new book, Who Will Accompany You? My Mother-Daughter Journey, Far From Home and Close to the Heart, takes us along with her for the ride. When her two daughters venture into unknown territory, one of them meditating in the Himalayas and the other negotiating with the Colombian military. I need to hear more about that. After learning about this, what does she decide? She decides to go too. In the process, she reflects on her own lifetime of wonder loss and what it means for a parent to love and to let go. Generous, insightful, and deeply funny, Stafford is the ideal tour guide for a journey as big as the world and as intimate as the human heart. Now, joining us from Massachusetts, where she resides with her husband, 2 dogs, and 1 large cat, Meg, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much. I'm really delighted to be here. Really appreciate the opportunity to be with you and your audience.
Thank you. And it is my pleasure. We love bringing people like yourself onto the show. And I think that by sharing what you share, it opens the world up for people and maybe things that they haven't thought about doing. But before we dive into kind of the many questions that I have about your new book and your journey, what advice would you give Jackie?
It's a great question because I am sure that she is not the only one wondering exactly about this. And I was talking with someone earlier. It wasn't about her mom. It was about a friend, but it was a similar kind of issue. And one thing that I'm going to assume is that her mom has her best interests at heart, mm-hmm. and that it's important to keep that in mind. But also, oftentimes, we as moms or friends think that we have suggestions for people, and they may or may not be ready to hear them. And one of the things I was talking about with the woman this morning was how for her, she needed to ask a question of her friend before she gave advice. She was frustrated that her friend was not following her own advice. And one of the things we talked about was making sure that she could ask her friend if she's ready to hear some suggestions or not. And she thought about it and realized that when the roles had been reversed and her friend had been giving her advice unsolicited, she was not wanting to hear it. And it's tricky because when we ask whether someone wants to hear our suggestions, we have to be willing and ready for them to say, no, I'm not ready right now. And then you just have to sit on it. But going in this direction where she's receiving unsolicited and unsolicited criticism, it's if she's able to bring up with her mom that she knows that her mom has her best interests, but that there are times when she's unable to hear it, or that she would really be willing to approach her when she is wanting to ask for her suggestions and advice, that clearly she has lots of experience, but that in order for her to make best use of what her mom has to say, could she wait for a time when she asks?
So, now, I love the fact that you brought up about the fact of the question. You know, I was thinking as you were saying that about many years ago, a couple that were dear friends, and the wife asked me to talk to her husband about his eating habits and drinking habits and such as it related to his health. Because she said, you know, she said, you're always in great health. I wish he would do that too. Can you talk to him about it? And I said, if he asks me, but I'm not going to start a conversation with, hey, by the way, let's, and I'm going to, it's like I'm criticizing, you know? So right. I couldn't agree more is that, you know, if somebody asks, then that's great. But I don't know that everybody takes it really well when you just decide that you're going to volunteer that you think that their health or whatever it is, their criticism, whatever it is.
Right. Their parenting.
their parenting's. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's hard to see someone that you care about hurting, as in your friend's situation. But until that person is ready to hear it, as you said, it's just bringing it up out there. Most people know when they're doing something that's not healthy. So unless they're looking for ways to have help with that or fix it, it is a very tricky thing to bring up. And same always with parenting.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, now in speaking of parenting, now you've led a very, very interesting life.
Thank you.
And you've chosen to be a social worker, now to write this book. So when did you really decide, or actually not even that, is that before we talk about deciding to write that, in regards to your upbringing, is that where you learned in regards to balancing loving your children with giving them wings? You know, is this something that goes back a generation that has helped you to become who you are, or is this something you've developed yourself?
It's an interesting question. I would say a little bit of each. Okay. So I was afforded a fair amount of freedom from my parents. They were both working, and I grew up in a neighborhood where I could go out and be with my friends and come back and come back for dinner, or as I got older, I could ride my bike places. And so I did have a fair amount of freedom, and they didn't interfere too much in my schoolwork because mostly I was getting it done. And they had other things that they needed to attend to. So part of it, I think, was intentional, and part of it was circumstantial. And I have to say, when my kids were young, they did make an effort to stay out of the way and to let me parent on my own. And there were some things that I wanted to do very similarly to my parents, and some things that I wanted to do differently. And we all are given messages, some of them very explicitly, as we grow up. And some are just implied and we don't even realize we're absorbing them. Actually, one from my dad that I always appreciated was he felt that education was important, that academics were important, but he also felt that we need balance in our lives. And he very clearly said, because I think he felt a lot of pressure in that regard. And so he wanted to make sure that although I did well in school, that I also had fun. And so I really took that to heart and made sure that I was enjoying myself and that I wasn't doing anything so exclusively that I didn't have time to live my life and connect with the people that are close to me. And one of the other things that I would say that I thank him for is, and I did it at his service many years ago, after he died, was that it was okay to disagree. And that's really important because many people grow up feeling like a disagreement is going to tear the fabric of the relationship. And I'm really appreciative that disagreements were welcome because they created some interesting discussions. God needed sometimes.
I love that in regards to the disagreement. And one of the things that I've always said is one of the most difficult things to do as a parent is to teach your child to question authority when you are the authority. Mm-hmm. It's such a difficult balance, how can you do this and still make it work? But in regards to disagreement, I just had one recently with my son that lives in Texas, my youngest son, and he called, and he's also a writer besides his other job. And he said, "Dad, I'm having trouble with this one scene." And he explains it all out. And I said, "Okay, let me think about it and call you back." So I call him back and I came up with something I thought was great. And I said, "Okay, so if you could do this and do," and I went through and I explained everything. He thought about it. He went, "I really appreciate you giving me that, but no, that's not going to work. And here's why." And he explained why. And it made perfect sense after he explained that because I didn't know the whole story. Mm-hmm. But what I was happiest about was that he was so comfortable with saying that, mm-hmm. and that it didn't bother him at all. He knew it wouldn't offend me. In fact, I sort of, kind of puffed up, kind of proud, going, "That's what I like to hear.
That's my boy."
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And also that he could explain, it sounds like he was very kind and thoughtful in the way he was able to explain what wasn't going to work. And then you tried and that one didn't happen to take.
Right. And I think if for those that are listening, by him handling it that way, it makes the other person want to try next time.
Yes.
Whereas if you just shoot people down, the next time you ask them for something, I don't know. And they'll just shut you down because, hey, why do I try if you just shoot it down? So to do it and explain it and everything, I think is such good communication skills.
Yes. And something that Jackie might be able to request of her mom is,
there you go,
to remind her that that it's helpful to hear some positive things, that it isn't just all the things that are not going right, but we all need support and acknowledgement of the things that are going right as well.
Well, as we're talking about relationships, let's talk about your relationships with your daughters and how it is set to the point that you were so comfortable to go off to Colombia and the Himalayas and everything else because they were going.
Yes. And I would say in both instances, with Kate, who wanted to, at 17, wanted to go to Nepal and India was the original plan, mm-hmm. or Bhutan, because she was studying the question, what is happiness? We realized that we weren't comfortable just popping her on a plane at age 17 and saying, "Well, I hope somebody picks you up there when you're 24 hours later around the world." But I love travel myself and have been a number of places, and I really wanted to support her desire to challenge herself and her desire to travel. So we worked out that I would go too, and I would trek to the Annapurna Base Camp while she was studying meditation and Buddhism. And I remember talking with one of my good friends about it, and he said, "Why didn't you just say no?" I realized we hadn't even considered it. Hadn't occurred to me to just take that whole idea down, but really about how to make it work. And then when our older daughter was wanting to go to Colombia, it was not the job that I would have wished for or chosen for her, providing unarmed accompaniment in the countryside. But she was an adult, a young adult, but still mm-hmm. an adult. And I was not in any position to say no. I was just in a position to understand why she wanted to be there. And then I made it my business to go and visit because it was important to me to see what it was actually like there, both the country and what was this job like. Was it really dangerous? Were people friendly? Was it supported? So it was important for me to be there.
Well, I think it speaks volumes when our kids want us to go with them.
You know? That's true. I was appreciative of that.
You know, but to me, that's a sign of we did something right, you know, up to that point that they want us around. So I think that's great. You mentioned that somebody had asked you, why didn't you say no? And the thought that I had as soon as you asked that was, it was on happiness. How do you tell a child no when I'm studying happiness and I've learned that this place called Bhutan is one of the happiest places on earth? That would be a hard thing to say no to. And I love the fact that it's like, well, I'm going to say yes, but I'm going with you. You know, that's
in this case. Yep.
And one of the things that, and I think that it's in your book. See, I read part of the book and then I also did some just, you know, some studying on some of the things that you've posted and stuff. But there was a place where Kate wrote, you know, I'm really learning on the theories that meditation brings happiness and that challenge brings happiness. Mm-hmm. What are your own personal thoughts on how to achieve happiness? And did they change from before your trip till after your trip?
So I would certainly support both of those two. Meditation, any kind of self-reflection time that we're able to give ourselves. For me, sometimes that means walking or riding my bike, or because I tend to do both of those things without headphones, without listening to anything. Sometimes I'm talking on the phone, but a lot of times it is just the quiet, and it is that time to just reflect and let things absorb. And often that's when I would start writing a column in my head. It would come to me. And challenge is certainly, it is very satisfying to set out a goal, whether small or large, and then to see it through. Just even we redid our bathroom, and it's like, I love looking at it. We had talked about it for so long, and now we did it. And just doing that, even with the help of a contractor, was still satisfying. And one of the things that I was reminded of on that trip was, for me, how important it is to be in the mountains and appreciating the beauty of the world. I listened to a podcast recently on awe and how we all need awe in our lives, awe and wonder, and that it is healthy and sustaining. And mm-hmm. being in the mountains is one of the places that I find it. I mean, the podcast lists several of them, music. There are a number of ways that reading about people who do inspiring things, being in nature, all influence our lives in a really positive way. So I hadn't been on a trip for 3 weeks for many years before that one. And I haven't been on one quite that long since, but it just made me realize how important both the time away and in beautiful places. It's just, there's nothing like being in a breathtaking place.
I love the fact that your column focuses on moments. And it's one of the things that I've recognized is I feel like we've evolved, or at least I have evolved, from things to moments. You know, and even now when it comes to, you know, gifts and things and people, oh, you know, what do you want and stuff? How about a special moment? Let's do something that's a special moment. I got plenty of stuff. I don't need any more stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, share with us some of the special moments, either the ones that you've dealt with yourself, or just the ones that you've written about that are the type of moments that make people put them in a little bit of awe.
Yes. Certainly it can be, and I agree with you that it is wonderful to have experiences as gifts, whether it is concert tickets or theater tickets. I know one family that for the holiday time, they stopped giving each other gifts and agreed to go to performances together. And so they make that time to do that. And that's one of the things that we love to do as a family. In fact, I know that this Friday, we're going to be going to a concert together, the four of us, for Mother's Day. And I'm looking forward to that. And so there are some moments that we can intentionally create. We can go to our local park and bring a picnic there. And that can be a really wonderful thing. We can hike a mountain together. We can just sit in the backyard. And part of what makes it memorable is making sure that we're talking to each other, that we're having conversation and devices are away, and that we're really there with each other. And there are sometimes moments that that we don't realize until after that. There was one of my columns, I looked at them several months ago because I'm planning to put a bunch of them together as toward my next book. But I wrote a lot about the kids when they were small. And there was one when it was picture time for kindergarten. And my daughter loved this dress. She always wore it. It looked great on her. It was a really beautiful gift from my husband's aunt. And it's like, cool, so put that on. It'll be perfect. And on the day, of course, she had something totally other in mind. And I don't know if it was some combination of stripes and plaid or, you know, polka dots. But I tried so many ways to cajole her into wearing the dress that she always wanted to wear. And then I finally realized that it's like, what am I doing? It just is her being in whatever it was that she was going to wear was going to be reflective of that time. And it was only afterwards that I realized that it had been a particular moment that I realized to let her be herself. So some of them is making sure we're paying attention in the moment, because it's afterwards that we realize, oh, that was an interesting thing or a funny thing.
Yeah, and see, that's a great point, because what I was thinking as you were saying that was you probably set up for a moment that you were looking for to see the smile on her face, to be in that dress that she'd always wanted to be in. So you have a vision of one moment and she's already off. She's on to a new moment.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that's where we have to, I mean, as parents, realize that, you know, we may have to skip over that moment or get that other moment another time because they're focused over here now.
Right. Yes. It's not always easy to keep up. And when my other daughter was going into kindergarten, the bus forgot to pick her up. And she had gotten all dressed up and she put on clip-on earrings, which she had never done before. And I realized that the bus had just forgotten to stop by our house. And so I drove her to school and the bus driver happened to be sitting at the end of the driveway in the bus. And he was kind enough to give her a ride, her own ride in the bus around the block, and then drop her off right where she would have normally been dropped off. So it was not the moment we anticipated of getting on that bus in front of the house, but she was still able to have one. And so it is important to be able to be flexible sometimes. We got lucky with that one, because I never could have planned that he would be right there.
Mm-hmm.
We got lucky there.
Yeah. And in some cases, we end up with a better moment.
Right.
If we just give it some time. I was talking to someone anyway, they were talking about, you know, oh, that's terrible. And it reminded me of, there's like a Chinese or a Chinese proverb or whatever, to where, you know, whatever it was that would happen, the old Chinese man would say, maybe good, maybe bad. and it goes through this story of, you know, that, you know, he, you know, his horses, you know, runs away, you know, and they all went, oh, that's so terrible. He goes, maybe good, maybe bad. The next day, the horse came back with two others, you know, and yeah. So on. But it goes on. And then his son rides the horse and gets bucked off and breaks a leg. And, you know, and everybody's, oh, you poor man. And, you know, that this has happened, and maybe good, maybe bad. You know, a week later, the army comes in and drafts every child over 15 years old and takes them off to the army, you know. Maybe good, maybe, you know, so anyway, but it goes on. So I think if we can approach things that way, that, oh, mm-hmm. Well, I missed the bus. Maybe good, maybe bad.
Right. There's often an alternative. And yes, certainly we can't always know how it is going to play out.
Okay. Right. We are speaking with Meg Stafford. We are talking about her new book, Who Will Accompany You? My Mother-Daughter Journeys, Far From Home and Close to the Heart. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back, and we're talking with Meg Stafford. We're talking about, you know, obviously your book, but you do a lot more writing than just a book, and because you have your weekly news column. Share with us a little bit about, when did you first become interested in writing, and how did that develop into now writing books?
I became interested in writing as a really little child, like before school, when I would make little tiny books and tape them together. And my mother prided herself on the fact that she did not instruct me about how to write the words, but just let me write them in whatever spelling I was going to come up with, whatever letters. But right on through grade school, I would continue to write stories now and then. And but it wasn't until really after school and graduate school for social work, and after my first job working in a hospital, when I realized I need to be writing. It's a part of me. I need to be getting stuff out there. And I approached the editor of the Somerville, Massachusetts Journal, and it's just outside Boston, right across from Cambridge. And he really gave me carte blanche to write about whatever I wanted to write about in the op-ed section. So I wrote about My first early pieces were about getting an answering machine, dates me. And as a 20-something-year-old, I had received a flyer for prepaid funerals. And I thought that that was hilarious and not very relevant to me. But I wrote a column about it, and I actually also wrote a serious piece about it. But I wrote about when my mom left her home of 30 years. I wrote about my pets over the years, and I was fortunate enough when I moved here to Littleton, where I live now, that again, I had editors who encouraged me to write about feet, my first pedicure, my feet. You know, when our animals were ill, when they did crazy things. And so I was really fortunate to be able to have that outlet. And when I went through breast cancer, I was writing an email distribution list, and people started encouraging me to get it into book form because they wrote about, I was writing about things that they had maybe not been aware of, that their mother, sister, cousin, whatever, wouldn't talk about. And also I was writing about all the things in between, and a lot of crazy puns in there. So I warned people off, if you don't like puns, that's not the book for you. But I was encouraged to get into book form and hadn't thought about writing a book, but did do that. And then with this, after my trip to Nepal and Bhutan with Kate, the first concept of the book was that it was just that trip, going back and forth between her perspective and mine about what it was like to be so far away from home and doing the things that we were doing. So the first title was Sitting on Top of the World, where she was literally sitting and learning to meditate at the Kokwan Monastery. And I was trekking, but in the Himalayas, which felt like they were on top of the world. And then I realized that that wasn't enough. And after Gail's time in Colombia and my visit with her, wanted to have that be a chunk of it. And when I was working with an editor, she said, and what about your husband? And what are his thoughts? And how did you get interested? And so that led into the last section of the book, and Who Will Accompany You was born, which was actually, that was one of the titles of the blog post that Gail wrote, because she was doing accompanying and she was talking about who she accompanies and helping people realize that the people reading her emails and blog are accompanying her. Long answer.
Yeah. When did you write, in other words, did you start writing the book in regards to topic of cancer while you were still going through, you know, the
treatment. Yes. So the book really is, with some edits, a compilation of the emails that I wrote in real time during that time, because I was happy to tell people what was happening, but there were so many pieces of information and I couldn't bear to tell people over and over and over again. And so I started writing this email to people, not every day, but many days. And sometimes people would write back and sometimes they wouldn't. But it was largely those emails that were written right during the time. And my daughters were 12 and 17. So one was just starting a new school. One was applying to college. And it included everything that was going on then. But it is largely based on the writing that I did write during that time.
And do you feel that writing was your therapy?
Part of it, absolutely. It's just for me and for other people as well, I believe it can be really helpful and cathartic to download what's going on in your mind and heart and get it onto paper, because then you don't feel like you have to hold on to it. And I absolutely feel like it helped me to not hold on to, if I was scared about something, I wrote about that. If I thought something was funny, I wrote about that. whatever it was that was occurring, by being able to get it out was hugely helpful to me. And however people responded was fine. There were some people who would read every word and write back every time. There were others who never wrote back. There were some who maybe read part of it, but like I just decided that however people responded was going to be fine. But I will often assign people a writing assignment when in therapy, because it invariably makes a shift in how we feel about something. Even if we're writing to someone who is no longer with us, in getting the words out on paper, and in those cases, addressing it to that person, it helps to sift and filter through and release some of what's in there. So it was a really helpful tool for me.
Yeah, I certainly agree and got that feeling. And especially the concept of using humor. It would be hard to explain to people, I'm sure, they're with what you're going through. They're like, how can you be making a joke? You know, how can you be using humor at this time? How did people, most people, respond when you would do something like that?
They mostly appreciated it. Although I have to say, there was, I'm trying to remember the context. There was one person in my office who English was not her first language. And I was writing about, my daughter had rats. That's what it was. My daughter had pet rats. And she got concerned that we had rats in the house. And what was I doing about the rats in the house? And she just didn't appreciate that. These were pet rats. but people mostly appreciated it and appreciate it even, because it helps to break up some of the seriousness. And it's just things that came up. There was one right after going to one of the early appointments, we stopped at the post office and the postmaster was like stamping some package like it was like he was decorating it. It was so many stamps all over it. And then he started talking about, like, out of nowhere, there's a long line there in the post office. We're all just like trying to get our stuff done and leave. And he starts talking about how some relatives mailed their cremated remains in the mail. And it was very heavy. And he said, oh, that must have been a really big guy. And we're all just looking at each other like, where are we? Is this the Twilight Zone? Why are we hearing about this in the post office? So just anything that popped up was important to be able to laugh when we can. So.
Yeah, it sounds like he didn't understand the term TMI.
Exactly right. Yes, he was defining it right there.
And you were just talking about appreciation, and I want to get back to the trip. I think I told you even before we went on the air that I'm really looking forward to going to Bhutan at some time. But you wrote that you thought that it would take some time to fully appreciate what you brought home from the mountains and the streets of Kathmandu and Bhutan. Since some of the time has now gone by, now I guess quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
What do you really appreciate about what you learned on that journey?
I really appreciated being in a place that's so different from home. It was really wonderful. Well, there's the physical beauty. That's one part. And then it is just, I love the stretch of seeing people dressed differently than I am. They're devoted to their religion in a different way. It's very public. There are prayer wheels on the streets often that they're spinning, and the foods that they eat, it's fascinating to see what kinds of foods they eat. And when we were in Bhutan, oh, I don't know if it's the same now, 10 years hence, but they were just opening up to more tourists, and they had very specific places that they wanted you to visit. had we had more time, we probably could have gotten more into the countryside. But they also had very particular restaurants that they wanted us to eat at. And so we didn't have a lot of choice about the foods that we ate. And it was interesting to see that that was something that was important. It's interesting to see what's important to people, what is different, what is new. It's in the airport in Nepal, there were two policemen holding hands. And it's like, that's not something that you would typically see here in the States. So it's like, and it was that's, no one seemed to say anything or notice, but I love being places that have different experiences from what we have here. It stretches us and makes me feel connected to them.
Did you sense or feel the happiness that they seem to have? And yet I've also learned, I mean, they don't have a lot, and it's actually a very difficult terrain to get around and things like that.
Very mountainous.
Yeah. But the happiness part.
It's, to be fair, in just a few days and not talking to a lot of people other than our guide and the driver, people were pleasant. They did seem content, but we had a small sample. But I know that they really do like their king and queen. They're one of the few places that has those, and there are big portraits of them everywhere you go. So it's like they are appreciated and revered in some ways. So it'd be interesting to spend more time there and get an even better sense of that. But the fact that they literally send out a questionnaire to people, the Gross National Happiness Questionnaire, to ask, and was stunning to me. It's like, okay, I want to be there.
Yeah, it made sense to me. I'm looking, we've got about 5 minutes. You also alluded to the fact that you found it somewhat difficult to enter the empty nest stage of life, something that I've also recently gone through. What did you learn that you feel could help others get through this stage a little easier?
So now I'm, well, I guess 10 years on in some ways. It's like everything else, it is absolutely an adjustment, but that if you're staying connected to your kids, it's different. And also with both of these trips, these were both places that I went because of them. And that's true of other trips that we've taken as well. Kate lived in the UK for several years. She went to college there and she was in London and we visited her there. I visited Gail in Peru. That was the first mother-daughter trip when she was in college. We went together to Hawaii to visit a friend of hers there. So it doesn't stop. It changes form, and they're interesting people. It's interesting to hear what they're interested in, and it does mean finding new ways to stay connected. Like I worried when our kids started driving, because with all the driving we needed to do places, there was always a time to chat and to connect. It's like when they started driving themselves, like, when are we going to chat? But we make the time, and technology affords lots of ways to check in. It can be a quick text here or there, a call, and computers, much easier to stay in touch when people are far away than it was when I was away in college in France or England.
Did you find yourself taking up any new hobbies, or, I mean, what are some of the other things that you do when the kids have gone?
I definitely continue with my hobby. So writing was one thing that I was able to continue to do. I bike ride like 20 to 25 miles a few times a week. or swim. I hike. I've gone on a couple of hiking trips. I biked from Boston to New York and hiked around Mont Blanc. It's Tour Mont Blanc. It's a very iconic hike. My husband and I biked in Nova Scotia. So it definitely helpful to have other interests that you're able to expand on once the kids aren't there. That's always a good thing to have the interest. The animals keep us busy. and there's always, I'm always interested in hearing new music. And in fact, I'll be going to Lithuania this summer to write about a music festival there that a violinist who lives here but is from Lithuania, she puts on a free music festival for up-and-coming musicians, and there are free master classes and concerts, and I'm going to go and write about it. So I'm excited about that as well.
Sounds like fun. Now that you've completed this book, what's your next major goal or adventure that you have set up?
I do hope to organize my columns by category into a book, and to write about what that category is, whether it's parenting or relationships, the animals, death. That's a current a thread, having experienced people's. But I also, it feels important to get them in one place. It's kind of, that's a legacy project. So that's one writing project, but we're hoping to travel more and go to New Zealand next year. And so those are two big things in the relatively near future.
Well, I'll be keeping an eye out for the new book. And for everybody out there, again, the book is called Who Will Accompany You? My Mother-Daughter Journey, Far From Home and Close to the Heart. Meg, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this information, but also for, putting the time in to write the column. I love the fact that it has to do with moments. If we can get people to be more focused on moments, less things, more moments, and I think that that will help bring greater happiness to many people's lives.
We can do it. Everyone can do it.
Absolutely.
It's available to us all. So thank you so much for having me. I really have enjoyed being here and talking with you.
You're very welcome. Take care. For everybody out there, be with us next week when we are joined by David Dye as he discusses his new book, Tomorrow Together, Essays of Hope, Healing, and Humanity. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network. I guarantee you there will be something that you will find that will somehow either touch your heart or be able to really something that you, it will either help you or something you will find that you will want to share with somebody else because you know it will help them. The next time that you are on Facebook or if you are on Instagram or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. Check out some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. And be with us this next Sunday at 11 a.m. when we're going to have a special Mother's Day show. For all of you out there, for all of the mothers, thank you. For those that don't know, my brother and I lost my mother fairly recently. And this is a time for all of us to really show gratitude for the mothers that are still with us and those that are not. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.